You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking around the court square sidewalks, looking in windows.
After a day off, back is Michael Musselman.
Yes.
What is up? How was your day off?
It was good. It was Elk Chili Day.
Tell everybody, tell everybody about it. What is Elk Chili Day?
Is it chili that comes
from elks, or is it the Elks Club that puts on a chili thing?
It's elk meat. So every year, Ron at the ranch, at the big house on the ranch, hosts elk chili for all of like the first responders and everybody just in city and county government here in Hood County. So you have judges and all the staff and, you know, police, sheriff, DPS guys, the Texas Ranger guys were there. I mean, just everybody gets together because they know each other and you just hang out. And everybody comes by and grabs a couple bowls of chili or some or apple or cherry dump cake and goes back to work. And then the lucky guy, the lucky two sheriff deputies, they were the last ones in. They got to leave with all of the leftovers. Well, they brought it back to the office for the guys that couldn't make it. So, like the dispatchers and stuff like that.
Yeah, next time somebody might want to plan that one. All right, let's be the last couple people there, and we'll make out with the loot as well.
Oh yeah, I've learned that. Man, if you're the last one, you get to leave all the leftovers. Yep.
The let me ask you a cooking question. Do you when you grill steaks in during the winter?
Yeah. Yep.
And you're not going to use your grill.
Right.
Or do you broil or do you fry?
What do you talk about?
So do you always grill?
Fry?
Yeah, as in a cast iron skillet.
Fry what?
Steak.
No.
You broil if you're not going to use your grill?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know what?
I still use my grill.
Yeah, no. There's not too many times in California or Texas that you can't use a grill. And you have yours. Well, how would you? That's in a sheltered patio. Do you have an exhaust vent or anything like that? How do you vent?
Yeah, it's all screened in. So it's a screened in patio. So the breeze blows it out.
Okay, got it.
So when I smoke back there, It looks. It's pretty cool.
How does that? So in the winter, you don't have it sealed in with, like, glass or anything like that, do you?
No, we have roll-up shades that come down and protect. They're thicker. They're okay. More sun-blocked. So they come down, and they provide a little bit more protection.
That's a big fan because direct heat in those places sends the temperatures up pretty high.
Skyrocketing. Huge difference. So we got solar. On the front and back, we got solar outside screens. So from the front, if you're looking outside the house, you're looking at our windows, they're black. You can't see in, which is nice. But inside, they look like a normal screen. You see out, there's no loss of anything because it's like a two-way mirror, I guess. But they reduce 85% of all the solar when the sun comes through the window. And they do make a huge difference. So
what kind
I would always recommend get solar screens.
Explain explain that.
So solar screens, well, these are outside of the window. So I have window, normal screen, solar screen. Solar screen is just a material, just a different type of material that reflects the sun UV and sun direct solar radiation. And it's an additional, you can add, so if you've never replaced your screen, you can go to a hardware store, get a screen kit, it's a little roller thing, and some right tubing, and then buy the solar screen itself and go replace all your screens with solar screen. It's darker, make sure it's the right way facing, because there's, solar screen has one it's one side is facing the sun, the other side faces inside. And then put that, replace all your screens. It makes a huge difference with all your costs, windows that are facing the sun. But it reflects. I mean, and we didn't think it makes a big difference. It makes a huge difference. And they pay for it in the first year with what you save and your heating costs, your cooling costs.
When you're cooling. What about, so it's material that goes over the entire window? So it's just
a screen. It's just it's just a screen.
It's a screen that goes over both panes of the window?
Yeah, and the way they do it, they just put it, they match it to the frame so it looks like it's part of the window.
Got it.
It just adds an extra buffer. And it's another screen. So when I open my window, I have the window screen, that one that, you know, that's already embedded within the window frame. Right. And then I have my solar screen on the other side of that.
Right. Okay. I was curious as to how the mechanics of that all work. But I think that those kind of little unique things are, especially if you live in sun country, they make your house, because a lot of times for, you know, sun time, which is, you know, a good 6 months out of the year, you can't go in.
Oh, yeah.
You can't go in certain rooms because they're just too hot. Yeah, you shut them.
Yeah, they're uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so and you live in that part. You live in that part of the country where that's done. So anyway, the chef and I were talking. I think it's kind of interesting that he is more comfortable given his skill level. He's more comfortable cast iron skillet frying steak than he is.
I'll do that if I do a chicken fried steak. I pound it out, tenderize it,
right.
Dip it in the batter, and then throw it in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I told her, I said, it seems to me that you have more control over, you know, watching the exterior of the steak, the searing part of it, and then if you have a digital meat thermometer, you can make it perfect every time. I said I don't have your skill, so it seemed to me that broiling would work better for me.
And yeah, broiling is what I used to do is I'd put the steak, so I'd put some butter and stuff, and I'd get a good sear on the steak, cast iron.
Right.
And then I would take the whole cast iron skillet and the steak, and I'd put it in the broiler.
Ah.
And finish it off in there.
Ah, okay. There's a kind of a hybrid version of it.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't have his skills, because I'll talk about digital meat thermometer, and he says, yeah, I just use my thumb. He said, I'll just press on the steak, and I can tell. He's got a calibrated thumb.
Right. So when you do your, make it fist, and it's how, you know, so you're touching that meaty part between your thumb and your index finger, and, you know, so if you don't make a fist and you just kind of relax it, that's rare. Make a fist that's medium rare. Make a tight fist, that's medium to medium well.
I got an email this morning from, I played, I didn't know, you know, Eugene Sledge, who wrote With the Old Breed on Peleliu in Okinawa. I've been reading about him. I got kind of curious about him. And so he wrote a second book. He wrote a second book of the 5th Marine Regiment went from Okinawa. It's real interesting. When they heard the Japanese were going to surrender, none of them believed it.
Right.
They're like, yeah, look, the Japanese that we fought, nobody's surrendering. We're gonna wind up having to go to, and they all, I mean, they, listen to this, Mike. He fights all through Peleliu, and he fights through Okinawa, all 82 days of Okinawa, and he's never wounded.
Right.
And his friends used to bust his balls about, like, Sledgehammer, how could you never get wounded? I mean, think of all the millions of pieces of metal that flew by that guy in those two fights, and the probability that he's never going to get touched by anything. That's crazy. Right. Yeah. But they go to, so they all think they're going to die, right? At some point, your luck runs out. And then they, when they hear about this, Mike, and you can imagine this. So they're in tents on Okinawa. The tents are blown down because of the typhoons and stuff that roll around that part of the world. And so they're fighting the elements, living in the dirt in Okinawa. And then they hear about this thing called an atom bomb, right? You can imagine. Now, they get it from the radio and whatever else, like, hey, Gunny, what's an atom bomb? Hell, I don't know. And you can imagine them sitting around discussing what an atom bomb was. Supposedly, it blew up. It blew up a whole city. Yeah, that's bullshit. you could hear. And but ultimately, Japan surrenders, and they go to China. They actually go to Beijing, and they don't go back to the old barracks where the Marines were. They move into like the United Kingdom's legation, and they were living very, very well. But he tells about that, and I haven't got to the part yet. I'm listening to it. But what I'm very curious about is him talking about him going home is the part I was most curious about, because he's a funny, you know, dry-witted guy, and I played his speech he gave right. this morning, and, you know, he talks about rigging tents so they'd fall over new joins so they would earn a little bit, and he made fun of Janet Reno and the whole Branch Davidian thing, and you know, he's pissed about the Army Ranger thing in Somalia, because his speech is in 1994, so not too long after the thing happened in Somalia, and he's a quick-witted, smart guy. And very, 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 it's very cool, listening to the second book too. So, for those of you who enjoy that kind of stuff, it's like $16 on audiobooks. You can get it. And, there's also his first book is an audiobook, and, I wouldn't tell you to violate the copyright or anything, but it's on YouTube. But I would recommend you not do that. Just go ahead and buy it and give money to Sledge's estate. So, anyway.
Yeah, it's worth it. And then let me ask you a question.
Yes.
What is the most expensive wood in the world?
Mahogany.
It's not even close, dude.
Petrified wood.
That's not wood. It's a rock.
No, it's not. It's wood. It's just petrified.
That makes it a rock.
Huh? How could wood be a rock?
It's petrified.
So it's still wood.
So,
it's just
no,
petrified
it's not.
Wood.
It's not expensive either.
It's not.
What wood?
Does it have to do with the meteor that you want the gun made out of?
No, it's ebony. Ebony wood.
I thought ebony was
from
a color.
Sri Lanka.
I thought ebony was a color, not a wood. I didn't know that.
It's wood. Yeah. You know, the ebony's so dense it doesn't even float, it sinks. So don't make a boat out of ebony.
That's why you've never seen the USS Ebony
boat,
floating
right?
around.
Yeah, it doesn't work. But no, where ebony comes, you know, so they use ebony wood in like fingerboards on violins, keys, ebony and ivory, you know, the ebony keys, the black keys on a piano. It's used very sparingly.
Wood feels kind of light to me when I press on the ebony keys on a piano, I'm just saying.
Those are plastic. You haven't really touched an ebony key piano.
Well, then why do we call it ebony?
Because the good pianos are made with ebony keys.
And they're heavier keys?
Oh, yeah, that's a dense wood.
You don't know shit about pianos. I mean, this is bullshit. Now we're straying.
Shit about wood.
Now we're straying. How did you get into the wood exploration business?
Well, because I wanted to do a veneer decoration. Maybe on my cabinet. I want to make my cabinet.
Here we go. The garage is.
They come from Garage Magazine and feature my garage cabinets.
So this is the person.
But ebony's out, just to let you know. And I'm not going to use ebony.
And the person who will remain nameless, formerly known as Henrietta, she's encouraging this because she wants to redecorate the kitchen?
She doesn't know. She knows I'm doing cabinets, but she doesn't know like how far I'm going out on these cabinets.
Well, I know, but the farther you go, the better it is for her, yes?
Yeah. But there's some really, I was looking at, like, sandalwood. I'm surprised. Sandalwood is super expensive.
Why? It's made out of sandals?
They're so rare. Pink ivory. That wood's ridiculously rare. The Zulu is considered a royal tree.
Oh, my God.
Because the royal family was the only one allowed to actually own this wood.
Pink sandalwood?
No, pink ivory wood.
Pink ivory wood.
But again, luxury items, billiard cues, really nice billiard cues, you find pink ivory wood. African blackwood is really cool.
All these woods you're talking about are African woods.
Yeah, they're like African, Indian, Madagascar. There's one called Purple Heart.
Oh, we don't like that.
It's beautiful. The wood is purple.
Yeah, but we don't need Purple Heart wood. Here's an email.
It's from South Africa.
Mac,
or South America.
Do you think part of the explanation is that he was a mortarman? And even on Peleliu and Okinawa, those guys would have been a short terrain feature behind the company? No. Well, let me just tell you. Yes and no. Mike was a mortarman. 60-millimeter mortars, I mean, it's not like you're the 81.
Back in World War II, they're...
Yeah, you're
the
like,
range wasn't that great.
We're here, and they're there. So, and I will tell you this, the thing that offsets that, in my opinion, is the number of days that Sledge was involved. He made it through both of the, completely through all those fights. So, yeah, you can maybe say that, but if you read the book, right, the mortar section, they get thrown into, I won't say everything, but they get thrown into a lot of shit. And the fact that he's there the whole time, yeah, he's a lucky dude, man. He, you want to be standing next to Sledge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I,
well,
so
not
yes
really,
or no.
Because if he's the super lucky one, you're going to be the unlucky one. You get away from guys like that.
You're, I don't know where you go. But I got a very cool email. I've talked about Jack Riley. He's a squad leader from India 3-9 in the Battle of Gitlin's Corner, and he's been on the program a few times. He's just a great guy. Lives in Alabama. And he wrote me an email this morning. It's entitled Sledgehammer. Hello, Mac. Appreciate your segment on Gene Sledge. I first met Gene in the 1980s while attending a reception for the Commandant in Birmingham. We held receptions in Birmingham each time a new commandant was named. He was wearing a Purple Heart pin in the lapel. I was wearing a Purple Heart pin in the lapel of my suit, and he walked up and asked where I had been awarded the Purple Heart. I told him that I was with 3-9 in Vietnam. I asked what outfit he was with. He said Kilo 3-5 in World War II. I had read with the old breed and asked if he happened to be Sledgehammer. He said yes. That was his nickname in the Corps. From that day forward, we became good friends. My company had a quarry near Montebello, which is where Sledge wound up being a tenured professor. So whenever I happened to be in the area, I would call on him and meet for lunch. He was interested in how we operated in Vietnam versus World War II. He was also very interested on how the war affected me. It was just like talking to one of my buddies from Vietnam. A few years later, after he retired at yet another CMC reception, I happened to mention that I had loaned my copy of his book to someone, and they failed to return it. A couple of days later, I received this in the mail, and there's the book, and it's signed December 13th, 1993, to Jack Riley, with warmest personal regards, sincerely, Gene Sledge. Through the years, I have met many graduates of Montebello who were students of Gene. They each name him as one of their all-time favorite professors. For me, those talks over lunch were as if we had known each other for far longer than just a few years. Then again, we were just two grunts enjoying each other's companies. Semper Fidelis, Jack. These guys are everything that's great about our country and the Marine Corps. You know, they are. You read what Eugene Sledge went through with, his comrades in World War II, and Jack Riley, not only Vietnam, but Agent Orange that he's dealt with, his family's had to deal with, that his comrades have had to deal with, the Camp Lejeune water shit that's infected his body. I mean, these are just great, great Americans, and very humbling, but a very, very cool email. So I just wanted to read that and say thank you to him. And Jack Rod is a great man. Great man.
All right.
So anyway, Well, and Mike's a 3-5 guy too, so Dark Horse.
Yeah.
Hua. The hey Mac, I have a mortar question for Mike. Does he think that being the smart guy and learning how to work the whiz wheel that you were talking about the other day advanced his career relative to others? Not everybody can do the whiz wheel.
Yeah, what's the question then?
Well, so do you think that by being the smart guy that and getting into the FTC and being known as the smart guy, did that advance your career quicker?
No, I think just being smart did.
All right. I'm not sure if that answers yes or no to the question. Smart.
Well, FTC was easy for me because I liked Matt. It was just angles, you know. That's what.
Jeff Kenney was talking about that the other day, and he said, yeah, the FTC guys, they're into all that stuff. They like angles and all that stuff. Like, the rest of the Marines just look like what? So what happens if those guys get whacked? We have to throw the mortars? We can't shoot them anymore because nobody knows where they're going to go? Yeah, that's what happens. When we lose the FTC guys, we're in deep trouble. It doesn't work very well. So, yeah, they're the smart guys. The other guys are just like half loading, putting numbers on, leveling bubbles, things like that. They're not the actual brains of the event. The brains of the event are guys like Mike. That is actually, it's relatively humorous to watch. So anyway, what was your favorite part about being a mortarman?
I mean, just shooting the missions, working up missions, you know, doing all that stuff because it was hectic, man.
Yeah, when people are calling for those missions, they don't need them tomorrow.
Yeah. It was just fun.
Now, how do you get to the FTC? Did you go there as a junior Marine? Is it kind of you have to go be a team, a squad leader, you know?
Only on the gun line for very short. No, I just pulled right into FTC.
Because you were a smart guy.
Yeah. I mean, because I think it was, you know, so when you, like I said, when you talk about, when you pull in information back, you know, so shooting a mortar, the biggest thing that it's based off is the Pythagorean theory. So understanding geometry really helps, you know, and when you understand that and you can figure that out, and then that's what I liked because, and even in when I got to be a gunner and I worked in ballistics and trajectories and stuff, for me it was easy because I could see it in my eyes. I could see it in real space. I could see the angles. So I could see how things worked. You know, so it was simple for me. I could figure it out. I don't know how I got that after probably just over and over and over iterations.
Right.
But when you understand, you know, angles and the algebraic or the geometric shapes and and how those things work, then it's pretty easy. And it's just, I don't know, I had a good time doing it.
Mortarman. How does he, you know, the ASVAB breakdown go? Because I always thought that mortarmen were the smartest grunts. But I can't remember, somebody said, no, assaultmen are smarter. And I said, why do they need to be smarter? I mean, they shoot direct fire weapon. What do they do? So, is that true?
What?
Is that true in terms of you had to have a higher ASVAB to be an assaultman than you did?
No, I don't know. I think infantry guys were whatever. I don't know. Infantry guys were pretty low when it came to ASVAB. I think the required GT was like 90. Truck driver was like 100. yeah, something crazy.
What?
And that, yeah, and that's why, you know, my recruiter, when I got back and when he looked at my ASVAB score, he's like, no, you don't want to be a grunt. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, no, no. You know, and I didn't know what that meant until, you know, you look at it later and you look at your ASVAB score and you're like, oh, okay.
The and so, yeah, you had options. Plus, he had other quotas he had to fill.
Yeah, he wanted me in this, like, ridiculous calibration MOS for the avionics community to calculate. You know, and there's, like, yeah, you had to have, like, a super high ASVAB score and all these other qualifications. And that's what he was trying to sell me on, was to go into this whole calibration thing.
Yeah.
To calibrate calibration machines that calibrate calibration machines. And, you yeah. know, yeah, maybe it would have been a good job on the outside world after the Marine Corps, but, yeah, God, it would have been, like, boring.
Who wants to live in Barstow or Albany their whole life?
Yeah, measuring with a micrometer, you know, with a dork glasses and a freaking pocket protector. And
yeah, guys come to deliver. Guys come to deliver vehicles, and you're like, hey, man, how's it going? Haven't seen somebody. You're like the Maytag repairman.
Yeah.
You're that guy.
Oh, yeah. I see the problem. You're using a 64 threaded screw when you should be using a 29. You
know, like, jeez, I thought we put that in the TM manual. I can't believe we're still making this mistake. Like, and they're like, huh?
And they're behind the back. I'm going to beat this dork up.
What is this dude even talking about?
Yeah. So I became that guy that was making fun of the dorks.
And you know, but you don't know, well, most people don't know when they go to do that, they don't know that the recruiter, he's got an agenda, and that is to fill the quotas that he's been assigned. You know, he's got a mission to make, and you're a token in that monthly game. And where that token goes is not always where the token wants to go.
Right, yeah.
So, anyway, did your dad talk to you at all about doing any of that? Or were you on your own?
What's what?
When you went down to join the Marine Corps.
No, I did it on my own.
Whoa.
Did it on my own. Yeah, I just, like I said, on my own.
Yeah, you know, my kids, they didn't ask for too much guidance. I found out neither one of them told me they were going down to talk. They both kind of did. Well, you know what, which is the right way to do it. You know what I mean? Last thing you need is your daddy down there with you, you know, or, you know, it's either you or it's not you. It's not a family event, I don't think. But I'm sure some families do it together, but I don't think, I think that's wrong. Let me just put it that way. I think that's wrong. Here's another email. I thought Mortarmen were the smartest.
They are.
Well, that's what Mortarmen will tell you. They are the smartest.
Well, not Mortarmen, but a branch within the Mortarmen. So you have three elements within the mortars. You have the forward observers, the gun line, and your FDC. The gun line, monkeys. Straight up, monkeys. You know, monkey, electric, you know, shock therapy. You get monkeys to do anything. That's what those guys were, monkeys. Forward observers, they want to be infantry guys, but they really don't. So they like to attach themselves out and play grunt, and then they can come back to the mortar platoon when it suits them. They're, again, the narcissists of the mortar platoon. The forward observers. They don't know what they are. They're still trying to figure out what gender. You know, it's like that whole, oh, I don't know. Your FDC, those are the laid back, don't really see themselves as part of anything. They're like their own special club. You know, people walk in and they're like, hey, how come you guys aren't wearing your helmets and your flak jackets? Hey, monkey, go back on the gun line. Fire mission! You just yell that. And they'd have to run back to their, you know, when things just started getting stupid, you're laying there with your headphones on, and they're like, hey, how come you guys are just, like, chilling out? We're digging our hole. Fire mission! And they'd have to run back to their holes. They're like, you some bitches. Because this is how the world works.
Okay.
Very small group of individuals. The one percenters
run the show,
and the rest of you monkeys do what we tell you to do. Fire mission. Fire mission.
Okay. Here's for the infantry MOS. These are ASVAB minimums. Okay. For an 0311.
This is from where?
This is the list of the Armed Forces Qualification Test.
What source is it from, though?
TheBalancedCareers.com/UNCMC.
That's not true. I've seen that.
Enlisted. Okay, so let me just tell you what it says. All right. And it says rifleman, 80. LAV crewman, 90. Reconnaissance man, 105. Machine gunner.
Yeah, that's true.
Machine gunner, 80.
Yeah.
Assaultman, 80. Anti-tank guided missileman, 90. Mortarman, 80.
Yeah.
Mortarman is the same. Only an LAV crewman and an anti-tank assault guided missile. Why do you need a higher G? Why do you need a higher?
Because they think that, okay, so an LAV crewman, they're not infantry guys. They're truck drivers with guns.
Right.
And so they got to have some type of mechanical score. An MM, you know, it was on there, a little bit higher than everybody else. The other guys, the missilemen, the tow missilemen, it's like that is the easiest system to employ. Keep crosshair on target, pull switch. Right. Okay, got it. Pull switch, keep crosshair. No. Pull. Keep crosshair on target, pull switch. Don't pull switch and then put the you do it this order. And then it's all they got to do. And then they think that the job is so tough. You're like, oh, man. And you ride around all day. You don't walk. So, again, and I'm not saying mortarmen. Like I said, mortarmen are monkeys. But when you separate them, you have the monkeys that walk upright become FDC. They're like, screw this crap of bending over and picking fleas out of my fellow monkeys. I'm going to educate myself. And they realize that there's a better world out there, and they become an FDC guys. And then you have computer. See, then even in your FDC, you have your pecking order, right? Even in the FDC, you have your computer data sheet guys. They're the monkeys at FDC, courting information. It's you're writing down what I'm telling you to write down. You're my glorified secretary. Then you have your whiz wheel guys. Your whiz wheel guys, your second tier monkeys. They're smart. They're quick. Whiz wheel's not that hard. But then your calculator correction guy, the guy on the calculator actually doing the formulas and calculating everything as fast as a damn, a ballistic computer does. That's the guy. You don't, whatever he wants, you get. Because you lose that guy, holy shit, you are not an effective platoon.
Yeah, cats and dogs. The whole night.
And like I said, I'm not going to say that there were plenty of times where I had gunnies and lieutenants when I was a young Lance Corporal kissing my ass.
Yeah, because we lose musclemen. We're infected.
Yeah, oh shit.
We don't know.
We're going back to the old way.
Yeah, we don't know where this shit's going.
Yeah, so when I learned that, I'm like, oh man. I'm going to do calculator. I'm going to fix the – so I had an old Texas Instrument, a TI, like 1000 Texas Instrument, and it was a computer, right? But it was a calculator that was like huge, big scientific thing. And you could input all the known – all the formulas in there. And so when we used to do that, oh, God, it was crazy. These guys would be like, how do you figure that out? And you never – tell them. That's something that you never tell, like how it works, because you don't want people. It's like being a monarchy. You don't want the boys to come to age, because when they do, they're going to kill dad and they're going to be king.
Yeah, you need.
So you send them off. You banish them out of the kingdom. You're like, hey, Peterson, you're doing really good. You're getting hang of calculator corrections. Yes, I am. Hey, we're going to send you to Weapons Company 2-1. Why? Because they need a guy. You can be king there. You don't understand. I'm king here.
The last thing we need is
a new king. Yeah.
You know what? And the funniest thing about it is that he's not lying.
Oh, yeah.
He's not lying. He's not lying. And he's not even lying a little bit. Okay, let me.
Oh,
let
no.
me
this is how I. That's how I used to run it, man.
And again, not just when he was with Mortars. That's how he ran his entire career. All right, let's see. Let's talk about the highest, the requirement for the highest. All right. So among the monkeys, 105 is a high score, right? You get field artillery radar operator. You get field artillery fire controlman, artillery met meteorological man. Right, those are all 105s, and that's akin to the basic reconnaissance marine is 105, right? Refrigerator mechanic, which you don't like all these like these utility peoples, right? Refrigerator mechanic, diesel mechanic, like you don't even know who those guys are until you deploy and go to war, and then they're like gold. Like, where is that guy? Like, I didn't even know he existed. Yeah, it's so-and-so. So, but there is a group of MOSs that are, like, 115. And they are ground electronics maintenance, which is what Mike was talking about, right? Telephone technician, personal computer technician, electronic switching equipment technician, multi-channel equipment repairer. That could have been you. Ground radio repairer, and these all require 115. Counter mortar radar repairer. So those are your smart guys. They're at Barstow and Albany fixing shit. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be that guy.
That is not a fun, like, I don't know why you would join the Marine Corps to do that. It does not certainly sound like a good time. Right. Marine Corps can be a lot of fun, and a lot of the fun is like stupid stuff. Let Mike's talking about. Mike's talking about when you're the Lord of the Monkeys, and that's a fun event.
That's a great job because you can, as Lord of the Monkeys, you can figure out like who is that rising star within the monkey group, and so you can either banish him or befriend him and make him feel like. You know, that you'll never show that you're equal. Always show him that you're smarter.
Always.
So he feels like, okay. But once he realizes that he is as smart as you, now that's the battle, man. That's where the two big apes square off and they're beating their chests and they're fighting over the whole, you know, the brood. And who, the victor gets to keep the kingdom of the monkeys.
Montana Man wants to know, what's the minimum for an infantry officer? Is there one?
They don't do ASVABs. They go off of...
GCT?
The GCT, I think it is.
But is there a minimum?
Yes.
I don't remember that. I mean, I guess people that sign MOSs would know. They'd look at your GCT and say, yeah, he's too stupid. He can't do that.
Yeah, so the GCT is taken... Before you're taken, it's like an IQ test, right?
Right, right.
So, I mean, there is one. I don't know what it would be.
Let me see if I can.
And, you know, when I became a gunner, it was one of the things, even at TVS, that's where it really hit me hard. And I knew this, but, I mean, I really knew it now, was the fact that you can go to college all your life. It doesn't make you smart.
No, it makes you...
Your degree on your wall can hang from one of the most prestigious colleges in the world, but you could be the dumbest son of a bitch that ever walked the face of the earth. Because we had a lot of officers that were like that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, these guys would have history degrees and English degrees with at Ivy League schools. Just be dumber than a bag of rocks. And then we'd have like a general ed guy that got a degree at some junior college in somewhere in West Virginia, the brightest guy ever.
Right. Yeah, there was a time maybe in our culture that going to college was a mark of a higher form of intelligence.
Not anymore.
We have passed that.
Yeah, not anymore. That is a thing of the past.
Yeah. That is the whole thing.
Like academies?
Yeah.
Oh, hit and miss, baby. Either one end of the spectrum or completely on the other. Again, you'd think that going to the named academies, you know, the big service academies, boy, you graduate there, you're like, man, that guy's a smart guy.
Yeah, we
can. Come out of there, you're like, no, he's not smart. I don't know how. He must have been in the center of the herd because the predators never saw him. But he shouldn't be here. And most aviators, and I'm not blowing Rudy's, but, you know, most aviators that I met, always very intelligent. Sometimes too intelligent.
Yeah, there's a mix of skills that you have to have if you're going to be good. Right?
Yeah, and if Rudy's listening, he's not the too intelligent guy. He's borderline just right there.
He's above average.
Yeah, but he's the good balance of what you need.
Right. I used to look for in lieutenants and see
hairier guys. Oh,
too smart.
Too smart for their own good.
Yeah, there's a mix. I used to look for people who'd played team sports and big captains, BC students in college, because A students are get too anal on you, and that had a little bit of a quick wit. I don't mean a smart mouth. I mean a little bit of a quick wit. Like Sledgehammer, he says some funny shit, right? And there's a difference between being a dumbass and being, you know, a smart ass with a quick mind. And the quick mind meant they thought quick. And so I would normally do pretty well if you pick out of that group. But team sports are used to the rough and tumble. They know how to hang out. They know how to be guys and stuff like that. That's not a small thing when you look at leaders. And staff NCOs as well. You know, those guys, I mean, they fall in. They get along with people easily. They begin to influence people. And you're like, yeah, this is going to be good. But once you take dorks in, once you take guys that can't do it, getting rid of them is brutal. So the key was sitting down with your staff NCOs and your officers and saying, does anybody know this guy? Does anybody know this guy? Because we can go manipulate this and keep them out of this company. And that was a big deal. Keeping the dork, if you can keep the dorks out, you'll do pretty good. You'll do pretty good.
Hey, did you see this? Now we're talking about this. Newsweek just did a study on this, on the Brookings Institute, talked about going back from 1980, the average GCT score of the Marine officer was about 130 to 132. Today it's 122. And it says, you know, the actual title is Why Are Marine Corps Officers Less Smart Than Before? I'm like, are you shitting me? And then I looked at the date, and it's March 1st, 2019, Newsweek. Brookings Institute released this thing. Type that in. Newsweek, Why Are Marine Officers Less Smart Than Before? There's a whole article on it. It shows the graphs. Brookings did this. Reasons why, the key findings taken together over 34 years, the average score decreased by 6.6%.
Why are they? What's the reason?
Because the colleges, man. Because colleges are not putting out intelligent people anymore. They're just not.
What's the date of the article? What did you say the date was?
March 1st.
I'm looking at one that says Newsweek, Why Are Marine Corps Officers Less Smart Than Before, July 30th of 2015. Not that it means anything, but
mine says March 1st.
1980. This is the average GCT scores of incoming Marine officers, 1980. My GCT was 131. And I was pretty high in my company, in my battalion. I was pretty high. Maybe I had dumb guys in my battalion, but I was pretty smart and for my time. And because I used to use that. And let me tell you, if I hear anybody telling me I'm a dumbass, all right, you're factually incorrect. I have the highest GCP in this fucking platoon. Okay, so I'm not a dumbass. What did he just say? And then they'd go when they had duty, they'd go look it up too. Remember how you'd have those green and white computer printouts and it'd have everybody's data in there, right? And you could go looking through it. Like, here's the battalion commander's GCT. He was higher than me. He was like 140 something. I was like, shit, but I was higher than all the other lieutenants, and I used to lord that over those monkeys. Okay, and we all know that I should be in charge of
officers would never even qualify to be an officer. That's crazy, man.
They're monkeys. School was different back then, man. They required shit of you. And if you didn't pass...
Yeah, you had to put out.
You failed. And if you failed, you did not go anywhere. You stayed put. So, right.
You went to the factory. Yeah. You were pushing a floor switch that came down and slammed 80,000 square inch pounds into some kind of widget.
That's where you
were. And you did that 25,000 times to get paid $2.75 an hour.
But you did get a good pension if you stuck around for 35 or 40 years.
Ba-jam! Ba-jam!
Now the way it works is you can kind of do the same thing. And they're at the end of 38 years when you walk in to talk to the guy, the separations guy at your union, and you're like, "What about my pension?" Like, "Oh, well, man, you got a 401k. Did you contribute? What? Well, they didn't pay me enough. I have like 4 kids. I mean, I couldn't. Oh, well, yeah, there's no pension for you, man. What? Oh, no, there is. Yeah, you get $38 a month for the rest of your life. And you're going to get your wife after you die, she's going to get $18.43 for the rest of her life. So so that's kind of the marriage dividend.
Yeah.
Thanks, bro. That's how it is now. That's why our country's so screwed. I was talking to Tim Lynch and Jeff Kinney about this, and that is the loss of hope in the middle class, you know, that you're going to be able to get a better job and get paid more. That hope that used to be I kind of like the bedrock of the country, that hope's gone. You know? I mean, those middle class jobs that used to have, you know, good retirements with them, Mike. Now they're all 401k, which is all the 401k does is it says this, okay, look, we're gonna say that we have a retirement plan but we're not gonna pay you enough so that you can have kids, pay all your bills, and kick money into this some bitch. So what we're really going to do...
Yeah, we're going to keep you on. Yep.
What we're going to do is we're going to drop our own... You know, not only are we not going to be on the hook for the whole thing, we're going to probably only be on the hook for maybe 25% of what we used to have to pay because most of these people won't pay into their 401k. It's genius stuff. We're going to drop our entire retirement expense by about 75%, right? But we're going to sell them that this is going to be great. You're going to direct your own investments, right? We'll match what you put in, but 3/4 of them won't put in because we're not paying enough. God, it's beautiful. That's not the way it used to be, man. You used to have good, you know, good insurance, and you used to have good, you know, good retirement, and that's to me what and the discussion was, you know, they were both like pissed off. They were like they're like the gloom and doom brothers when I have them on, right? So they're like they're bitching about what's that girl's name from New York, AOC. They're bitching about her and how people are so stupid and blah blah blah. I said, well, let me tell you what I mean. When people don't see hope anymore, that they're going to be stuck in this job, you know, forever, and they don't see jobs being created that take them someplace, then that's how, and I talked about Theodore Roosevelt, you know, at the turn of the century when he became the president, and he saw the anarchy stuff going on in Europe, and he said, hey, boys, we've got to create a middle class in this country. We've got to pay them. We got to get, and that's when you had child labor law, the 8-hour workday, all these revolutions in the American workplace that created the middle class, and that thing's at risk now. So
you know, the news has given her way too much press, man.
Oh man, she's like the Donald Trump, the way he sucks the life out of everything when he's, you know, he sucks the life out of the news cycle. She does the same thing.
Yeah,
she does the same thing, and so. So I'm not saying
she's on again now. Yeah, I mean she's not, like, yeah. And every day.
I'm not saying she's good or bad or all I'm saying is to me there's that disillusioned middle class are the people that elected Donald Trump. They rejected Hillary Clinton and said, "I don't want another Washington insider. I want somebody who's going to turn it upside down. You're going to change it, and you don't." You know, and that's what I think it's going to be interesting. How long Nancy Pelosi can do what she's doing, which is play the whole burn it down political game, because the people that just got elected, they got elected and told, go end this shit, okay? We're tired of this. Go solve the problems of the nation. And what do? They go to D.C., and what are they doing now? They're playing the same fucking reindeer games as they played before. But they got sent there with a different message. So it'll be interesting to see how long that those Democrats can coexist with this shit.
Yeah.
Because so, I think they got elected, my opinion is they got elected up with a little bit different message. And then she survived their challenge right after the election and held on to her speakership. But it's old time stuff again. And this is what they didn't get elected to do. So, anyhow. You got any big plans for the weekend?
No, not really.
None?
No.
How many pages are we up to relative to the blueprints now? We were at 38 the last I checked.
There's a lot. I mean, so, like, there's just...
Are we at 39 or probably closer to 60?
I couldn't tell you. There's... Because I got, like, drawings of the front view, side view.
So we have annexes now, too.
Yeah, I got different, like, how the drawers are. So, I mean, I got different stuff as I'm drawing out. I to put it in my head. You know, so.
Well. All right.
Yeah. All right. It's, you know, as I go through and I'm talking about it, it's like, okay. So that's why I continue to go through and look at them and look at them and look at them.
Do we have any date that we're thinking about breaking ground on this thing or what?
No, not yet.
None. I don't like that. So was this a fantasy?
No. Definitely not that. This is definitely going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know when, but it's going to happen. But like when it does, I'm going to...
Are you kidding me? You know we're going to have to get a daily update.
Oh, yeah. I'll have, like, photos. We'll go through the whole thing, you know, and do that kind of thing.
All right, hold on. Somebody, Ohio Man, just sent me a... I'd love to debate you on the subject of the 401k. Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Exactly. The 401k is a ruse.
I know, but there's believers.
Yeah, Ohio Man, he's a believer. Let's see. I'll have to look for that data.
Right.
Overall funds invested under different plans? Oh, let me just show you this. As somebody who sat on a city council, when you talk about, you know, going to a defined benefit plan, and that's what we did for our firefighters, because they threatened everybody. We're going to go around town and say that you don't support firefighters. What? Yeah. We're going to say that you, and I voted against it. And I said, no. Do you want to open up labor negotiations and this will be a component of it? No. We just want you guys to give us that.
Where was this?
This is in 2007, I think, after I came back from Fallujah. I was on the city council. And so they come to me and another guy. We could both do the whiz wheel. We could both run the computers. We could do math.
Right.
And we said, no, if you want that, we'll talk about it. Let's talk about it. Are we going to open, like, the contract negotiation? Well, no, we don't want to do that. Well, what are we going to do? Well, the mayor says he'll just do it. Yeah, but how do we pay for it? Take the money out of the general fund. You mean raise taxes? Well, if you have to. Okay, look, I said that I wouldn't raise the taxes for anything but needs, okay? Is this a need for me? You've used this retirement plan for how many years? 25. Okay, so now all of a sudden this is a need because you want it migrated and you want it better. You want a better retirement plan. I don't know that that's a need for me. I don't see that as a need for me.
Right.
Well, if you don't support it, then we're going to go door to door and we're going to campaign against you. Like, Is that a threat? Okay. And they did that. They did that. He doesn't support police and fire guys. McNamara doesn't? I think he does. Oh, no. Oh, no. He doesn't. So that's it. And that's you wonder why, you wonder how cops and fire guys retire at 100% of their highest wage. That's what they do year after year. Yeah, all he wants you to do is migrate it from like 84% to 87%. That's all we want. And so you do that over the course of 30 years, and with the threat of we're going to go door to door and say you don't support us, then that's how you, that's how that happens. Another text message. What happened to the model airplane?
It's still there. Let me do the garage, because then I'll have a dedicated area to do it. That's why I'm building the cabinets, so I can finish the model airplane.
To build the model airplane. Plus, Mike said that it doesn't work very good in the cold weather, right? Is it good to do that stuff, paint and glue in the cold weather?
No, no, no. It's freaking cold.
Yeah. You got to be able to do some serious garage talk. So, I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
Right.
All right. Anything else you want to get off your chest before I let you go?
No, that's about it, man. I will let you know. It'll be getting here soon. The cabinets here soon. So I even have a detailed drawing of how I'm going to hang it, like the hangers that I'm doing.
The hangers?
How it's going? Yeah, how it's going on the wall.
What hangers?
The cabinets.
Well, I hope you have a detailed diagram of how you're going to hang them. That's moderately important, yes.
Yes, but see, that's like the whole what I'm talking about. I have drawings of door, cabinet door, the whole thing.
Well, you enjoy this kind of stuff, yes? The planning part?
Yeah.
A little bit. Okay. All right, man. Have a good one.
I'll talk to you later.
There you have it. The one and only Michael Christopher Musselman being a little bit of a dork, right? Being a little bit of a dork. That'll do it on a Friday. Don't touch that dial, though, because if you just tuned in, you're going to hear Eugene Sledge probably in a way that you haven't heard him talk. Kind of, he's given a little bit of a lecture. And you know what? There's two parts of it that are edited. Yeah. So I'm going to see if I can find this. This interview is 35 minutes. I need to see if I can find the original interview. So you're going to hear that in the first hour. You're going to hear the chef in the second hour. And I would tell you this. The chef in the second hour, we talk about two interesting things. One is crab cakes, one of my favorites. So, and then the second thing we talk about is, if you're going to grill steaks indoors during the winter, is it better to use a skillet, or is it better to use a broiler? Now I say, because of my skill level, for me, broiler. So, but we talk about that. Broiler, you can see it being seared, and if you use a digital heat thermometer, then you can, you know, calibrate the inside. So you can make it a perfect steak if you broil it. If I use a skillet, I can't really see the bottom because it's facing the skillet, right? When I'm searing it. Now, I can peek all the time. But so we have an interesting conversation about that. So, but again, I'm, I need to call Jack Riley. But I'm, Eugene Sledge wrote a second book, and it's about his life. And the book picks up where with the old breed left off, which is at the end of the war. And it deals with them going to China, the 5th Marine Regiment going to Peking, China. Yeah. The book is entitled China Marine, An Infantryman's Life After World War II. The little blurb about the book says this. After Japan's surrender in 1945, Sledge and his company were sent to China to maintain the order and calm the seething cauldron of political and ideological unrest created by opposing factions. His regiment was the first Marine unit to return to the ancient city of Beijing, known at the time as Peking, where they witnessed the last of the old China and the rise of communist China. Sledge also recounts the difficulty of returning to his hometown in Mobile, Alabama, and resuming civilian life while haunted by shadows of close combat. Through the discipline of riding and the study of biology, he shows how he came to terms with the terrifying memories that have plagued him for years. Poignant and compelling, China Marine provides a frank depiction of the real costs of war, emotional and psychological, as well as physical, and reveals the enduring bond that develops between men who face the horrors of war together. And that's the part that, obviously, I wanted to read about. So, anyway, I would tell you to check it out, China Marine, An Infantryman's Life After World War II. So, with that said, have a great weekend. And I would tell you that it's pretty cool. I have to footnote my argument with Ohio Man. That All Marine Radio has been selected to the Hill Vets 100 of 2018. How about that? This thing gets announced today, highlighting the most influential and impactful veterans, service members, and supporters of 2018. They have a gala in Washington, D.C. on the 28th of March. The full list is released at 9:30 this morning, Pacific time. So there you have it. All Marine Radio being recognized. How cool is that? Yeah. Boom. So nice. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for spreading the word about All Marine Radio. Thank you very much for becoming disciples of post-traumatic winning and reaching out and sharing this truth that, you know, that we know to be true by virtue of guys like Jack Riley, guys like Gene Sledge, right, that have talked to us about it. And now it's our responsibility to take what they have and amplify it and tell young Marines and young people in general, you have to talk about that stuff that has traumatized you. So, yeah, thank you all for being part of this. Anyway, that'll do it on a, Friday. All Marine Radio. Over and out.